Harry Faree and Gigi Alcock are in studio to talk about the latest controversy, and an unusual one, on South Africa's unemployment rate. Now, Gigi has told us about this for quite some time. There's a huge booming informal sector in South Africa that not too many people are taking account of. Harry Faree is the first corporate titan to support his view of the world, and the ANC have loved it. We'll find out more in just a while. All right, Kerry, you first up. You have to be first up. You're now being accused as the capitalist who supports the National Democratic Revolution, as the supporter of socialist ideals, that South Africa's actually doing well. All the data that we're seeing from the unemployment side is not right, because Capitec's figures show, and of course they're real world figures, yours, show that things aren't that bad. So how do you react to that, which I'm sure you've been challenged with people in your circle on this issue?
Yeah, I think, Alec, I think unfortunately everyone stuck to the 10% comment I made. And I know Gigi and myself had many conversations, and I really believe our unemployment rate is not 32%, but it's much closer to 10. But the real point I've made was that we need to understand the informal sector better in South Africa. And if we want to unlock and grow South Africa, I believe that is where the growth is going to be. Because if you look at employment, the big companies is not employing, government is not employing, it's the entrepreneurs that's employing. So the point I'm bringing across is we don't understand the informal sector, and we need to understand that we can support it with policies, infrastructure, investments, et cetera, to grow it, because then I believe we're going to unlock the potential in South Africa. But unfortunately, a big portion of South Africa don't understand the informal market. And that's somewhere everyone got into the 10% and, you know, the inequality, et cetera. But the big point is actually, let's understand that market and really develop policies for it and grow it. It's interesting being in Mexico. As you know, we've got operations there. 55% of their employment is coming from the informal market. And the point is, they understand the informal market. They're supporting it. They're giving them a roof over their shop. They're giving them a place where they can close their stock, et cetera. And I think that's what we need to focus on.
Harry, the quantifiable numbers, can you help us with that, given that you do have access to information that nobody else in South Africa has, being such a huge bank with so many clients and many of them in the informal sector?
Alex, it's actually quite an interesting one, because it's a difficult one, because if I look at our banking clients, we've got 9 million banking clients. Of them, 3 million has got it's not coming from an organization. So it's not a payroll. It's coming from multiple income streams. And if I look at all our research that our branches has done, maybe just that people understand, we've got 400 branches in these informal economies, or what we call emerging. So we understand what's happening. Each one of those people has got 3-4 people working for themselves. So if you just do a simple sum and you say 3 million times 3, it gives you 9 million people that's dependent on it. And I think it's very close to Gigi's numbers of between 9 and 12 million that is active. If you look at Finscope, which is an international company that is doing research, they're estimating that economy to be around about 10 and 12 million. But we see a tremendous amount of inflows. I think what makes it challenging is there's a very strong cash economy. And unfortunately, if you're sitting with a cash economy, you haven't got data. But what we can see from our side is plus minus about 9 million people.
Gigi, this must be music to your ears. You've been talking this language for a long time, but never had the quantifiable numbers.
Yeah, Alec, to what Gerry says, I mean, this has been my whole thing for years and years. Not only is there this terrible doom and gloom story about unemployment and lack of entrepreneurship and stuff like that, which makes us feel negative as a country. I mean, you know, if we can dispel that, because we're actually a nation of entrepreneurs. And I'll give you another example. A South African General Household Survey, which is a Stats SA survey that happens annually, they show that 77% of social grant recipients claim that the social grant is not their main or only source of income. Only 23% of social grant recipients say that the social grants their main form of income. So that's telling you 80% odd of social grant recipients who have a social grant income could be sitting on their bums doing nothing, or actually hustling and running their own business, and there's multiple incomes and passive incomes, things like rental. And that changes the story about our country as an entrepreneurial country, where people, even when they could get a social grant, are still going up and running little businesses and so on. So I think that's the first thing, the very different lens we have to look at our population. The second one is very much a Harry's thing. And I talk a lot, and I've spoken at your conferences about the concept of scaling up, not startups. There's a big perception, comes from government as well. The Minister of Small Business a while ago said we need more entrepreneurs in the township. I'm like, rubbish. We have these entrepreneurs in this space. We have hundreds of thousands or millions of people engaged in businesses and successfully. And these aren't just subsistence or survival businesses. These are businesses that people have been running for years, making substantial amounts of money. And if we looked at that environment and we said, we don't need to start up new businesses, it's incredibly hard starting a new business. Any entrepreneur will tell you, and even more so when you're in that informal space with a lack of support. But if we look to these businesses that exist and said, how do we scale them? How do we support them? How do we give them things like marketing skills, business management skills, shift them into the digital economy, give them finance models based on their turnover, help them with procurement where they can get procurement closer to their site and not have to leave their shop and so on and so forth. There's a multitude of things that would be completely transformative. At a flick of a button, quite honestly, we could transform the space. Capitec's business models around things like, you know, providing very low cost card acceptance devices, which you can utilize your turnover to then gain various finance products and so on. If we did that on a grander scale and we built on that, that's BEE. We shouldn't be doing any form of BEE. We should be, in terms of saying you have to appoint this or that person, we should be doing enterprise development, where we say, how do we build these businesses? How do we grow them? Not as suppliers, but actually as businesses in their own right. And it can be completely transformative. And this is the part that frustrates me with the government. I think that to a large extent, the sense is their vision of what an entrepreneur is Elon Musk maybe, or they're wanting people to be employed in the formal sector so they can be unionized and so on. But actually, the real opportunity to change our economy lies in this space.
Harry, it's been interesting looking at the comments or the criticisms of your support of GG's message, if you like. And some of those have been critical of you because it's gut feel and it's the way you seem to see the world. Now, that's not what I got from the little bit that you've spoken to us about already. This seems to be quite fact-based.
Yeah, Alex, it's a combination. It's a combination of data of our client base. Remember, we've got 24 million clients, close to 25 million clients, which we can identify who's in the townships, who's in particular areas, and we can see what is the activity break going on. And then when I talk about a banking client, that's a client that's got an inflow of 3,500 and more coming through. Plus, he's got two or three of our other products, which is then quite a hard definition. Then you must remember, myself, the first 650 branches in South Africa, I personally signed off, personally walked the streets, personally understood it. And I spent a tremendous amount of time in the townships and in the informal economy. And like I said, now we've got 880 branches, 400 of them, basically close to half, are in these particular areas. And I spend a tremendous amount of time, and my management team is spending a tremendous amount of time talking to our consultants, talking to our branch managers, and walking the streets. We're busy with a very big project in Tembisa, Soweto, and Khayelitsha to unlock the potential of what we call the emerging markets. So there's a lot of factual data, and there's a lot of what we see, what we experience on the floor. I, Gigi and myself, had numerous conversations on this, sharing data, et cetera, et cetera. And I just want to iterate what Gigi is saying about how do we get South Africa to be positive and how do we really unlock the entrepreneurial potential in South Africa? That is what it's all about. I had a very interesting conversation with one of our business clients that is producing glass. And I saw the ministers last week, Thursday, and I saw him on Friday. And he said to me his business has changed in the last 18 months that 30% of his business is into the emerging market or the informal market, which he's selling into it. And he believes that market is going to be 50% of his turnover in the next 2 to 3 years. And I asked him the question, I'll say to him, how would you make certain that you're the dominant player in that particular market? So it's not only the understanding of what the people are doing, what the entrepreneurs are doing, but it's the opportunity for the formal players to go into that market and make certain we get products and services in there, and also that last delivery mile. If you look at Takealot, for example, their last 30%, they are the biggest distributors in South Africa because they're distributing into those black townships. And that's just coming back to my point. We need to understand this market to really grow it formally and informally to see the full potential.
Did those ministers that you met with, in other words, the government, did they listen? Are they hearing the message yet?
Yeah. No, for sure. I think there's a big understanding, and it's a question of how, because there's statistical guidance that you need to do, and you must make certain statistically it's sound. And we all do certain pilots and look at our data and see how we combine our data. So there's for sure, how do we work together? But yeah, I just want to make that point. My whole thing is, how do we grow South Africa? And we're missing a massive part of the economy if we think we're only going to do it in the formal sector.
You know, it was interesting. I had a chat this morning to a very talented economist, Becky Mahlobo, who was explaining how we are shooting own goals on the international front. But Gigi, it seems like we're shooting own goals on the local front as well by not unleashing this unicorn.
Funnily enough, Alec, I've just finished handed over my manuscript of my third Gassinomics book to my publisher, and it's called Gassinomics Unleashed. And part of what I write about in that book, I use examples, and Hedy mentioned glass. There's a company, PG Bison, you know, who part of a listed entity. 40% of their business today goes into the townships, and they have this extraordinary enterprise development program working with 3,500 township, call it cabinet makers, carpenters, and so on. And they found that this is the fastest growing sector of their business. And they're seeing this real benefit to their business on the one hand. But I went to visit this extraordinary guy they work with in Soweto, who's part of their enterprise development program. He's got 30 million rands odds worth of equipment on his floor and has this all paid for cash. And he's built this business himself. In this space, and with a little bit of help with the, you know, things like technical support, workshop advice, and so on, by PG Bison. Now, you know, Heineken Beverages have a program called Taverns of the Future, where they invest in upgrading taverns, making them more compliant with the law, providing women's toilets, security features, and so on and so forth. And they're helping these, and it's again, it's I featured this story of how many taverns go from like growing 60-70% because they have more customers staying longer, they're offering food and so on and so forth. These are just simple models where not only does, and you know, in Zulu they talk about izandla zageza, you know, the hands wash each other. These are simple models where corporate businesses can benefit from investing in these businesses, but the businesses at the same time can benefit from getting the expertise, the advice, the support, and so on. So, you know, I think that that's the thinking is a different model of it. Up till now, I think a lot of the models are kind of like, you know, how do they supply a formal business or, you know, they kind of hand out stuff. There's a Spaza support program, which is an absolute mess, you know, that the Department of Small Business Development runs. If we looked at more business-orientated programs and we looked at this model of scale-up versus startup, it really we can unleash these sectors. And I think I just want to add here, I think one of the perceptions and even some of the criticisms of what Gerry said and some of the stuff I say is that most people's perception, they say, well, oh yeah, that just the fact that someone's selling apples and making a living, that's not a business. And that's such a poor perception. It's like, that's comparing, like you wouldn't in the formal economy take the person at the lowest level and then assume that everyone in the formal economy is, you know, so you wouldn't take an Uber driver and say, well, the total formal business sector is that, and ignore Avis as an example. So why do we do that in the informal sector? Why do we assume that every single one of these businesses is a hawker on a street corner just making a living? Yes, they're there, and that's sad, and we could elevate them as well. But the majority of businesses are substantial businesses who've been there 5, 10, 20 years, are very proud of their businesses. Many of them have left the formal sector to start these businesses in the informal sector. And we change that perception away from considering this business as subsistence survivalist, and that people are there because they have no other alternatives. Instead of celebrating and admiring the fact that they have built these businesses, they're proud of them, they don't want to leave these businesses, they want to grow them, then it changes the perception. And that's the starting point in many ways. Change the perception first, and particularly among government and various of the crowing classes who tell us stuff, who haven't been there. You know, it's like, I've been to every township in this country, and I was in Soweto yesterday, you know, and I was in Tembisa the day before. I've been there, like Kerry says, I can see this stuff, and it's not just anecdotal, there's data behind it. The FinScope survey that Kerry mentioned says that the informal economy is worth 2.3 trillion rand. I said it was worth a trillion rand, and everyone said to me, it's insane, it's impossible. So, you know, and we're seeing this stuff.
All we're just saying is bigger, Gigi.
how much, Harry, has your conversations with Gigi Alcock changed your approach at Capitec towards banking the informal sector?
Well, I think he's maybe just background. You know, we've been in retail banking all our lives, and then we were going into the small, we acquired Mercantile and then business banking. And then we said, but how do we go into these informal market or emerging? We hate the word informal. We talk emerging in Capitec. And developing those strategies and having those brainstorms on what we should do, how we should price, we had numerous of those. So he was helping us to, we understood the market, walking the streets, but now putting it all together to get to a proper proposition for the clients.
So you're going to be opening new loan opportunities, perhaps? Is that what might come from this?
Maybe just in simple terms is if you know that our business account is the same price as our retail account, so there's no differentiation, even if you're a big business or a small business. So we simplified it to 1, 2, 3, 6 rand and 10 rand fee structure that we are known for. We made that available for the business banking. We're getting our consultants and our salespeople going out there selling it. And then we said, but, you know, if you're handling cash, if you've got 1,000 rand, I don't know what you do with 1,000 rand. You can do 10, 15 transactions. I've got no clue what you do with the cash. So how do we get these people to use electronic payments? And there's basically three means of it. The first is providing them very affordable point-of-sale machines, and then cut the commission rates on those machines to a very low rate and very transparent. And we can see the effect of that taking place with our now want the people to be a swipe rather. Then the whole thing about you can pay any Capitec person by your cell phone number. So it's secure. You pay, you put in the cell phone number, you pay. And then the pay shop functionality. Then we're busy now, and we'll launch that later in the year. We'll add products onto our point of sale machines where the person can sell on a commission basis to his friends and family and clients. But it's changing his way of operating to a more formal business we can then score and understand what this person is doing, and then we can do lending from there onwards. And we've already started. I can give you many examples of clients that started with a 5,000 or 10,000 rand loan, bought more stock, employed more people. There's one guy that I'm thinking of now. He bought a bucky now 2 months ago. And it's just growing the business. It's giving that support. But, you know, there's from here, I think, in the beginning, I said I'm going to keep it a secret for Capitec, but I've just realized we need to work all together to unlock this potential in South Africa. And that's why I'm vocal about it. And that's why, you know, I think we must all say, how can we unlock it?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Your shareholders might be saying, hang on, you got a secret here. Why are you sharing it with the rest of the world? But it's so big, I guess, Gigi, that you better start sharing it, because that's the way the country can get a kick in the butt. And my goodness, we seem to need one right now.
Look, I do think, you know, I've worked with every bank in this sector, you know, and many of them aren't going down into the streets. So I think that Capitec's safe in many ways. But I think the reality is that once the market opens and the grows, you know, I get criticism from people saying, oh, you're just helping corporates get into this kind of space. And yeah, of course I do. And I believe, you know, I've said in the past, I used to be a political activist. Now I believe I'm an economic activist. And I believe the solution is really in about businesses engaging in this space. And it's not about charity, and it's not about, you know, kind of government or even municipalities trying to engage it. And we just look at the backroom rental sector. There's it's a huge sector. 30 billion rand a year is earned in backroom rental. Geordie Hillius, the mayor of Cape Town, recently announced new legislation and regulations that facilitate township owners accelerating and making it easier for them to do more backrooms. And then you have companies like Mastandi and others who invest with township homeowners. They'll pay for it on the basis they get a percentage of the rental of those backrooms. Now, that backroom rental owner has either got to go to a bank on his hands and knees and get an unsecured loan, or they could get, you know, some sort of loan that's based on this as a business. And suddenly that changes things, because now you've got a business that's invested in not only doing well for themselves, but at the same time growing their clients' businesses. And then again, it's that reciprocal business model. And I think the more that people recognize the space, the more the space gets more financially successful. And then the more business there is literally in the total pot. You know, I think we all know that if we grow the economy and especially grow the informal economy, that's how we're going to grow the whole pot for everyone. So, you know, and maybe just to add to it, that Finscope survey was a pretty interesting survey. They ended their survey, their launch announcement. They said the informal economy in the last 4 years has been seen to grow jobs more successfully than the formal economy. They do this survey every 4 years, and they found that the formal economy was growing jobs more successfully at a substantially higher rate than formal economy, small, medium, and micro enterprises. And so, you know, we're wanting this, you know, again, jobs is going to create a bigger economy, people buying more stuff and so on and so forth. The informal economy is going to create those jobs.
Kerry, just to close off with, and I can understand exactly why you want to get more information. You can perhaps give mortgage loans to the backroom operators, etc. But are they happy for you to have that information, given that a lot of operators at the moment aren't paying tax or won't be paying tax, won't be paying VAT, won't be adding that layer of costs to their businesses, and maybe want to stay under the radar from a government that many people are no longer even bothering to vote on?
It's interesting if we do questionnaires in these places and talking to them on what their needs and what their concerns are. Tax is coming out number 7, 8 that they have to pay tax. It's more of growing their business, putting a roof over the top, be able to lock up their stock at night, how to buy stock. Those are the bigger concerns. And then the whole cash fraud side, because it's interesting if you work in that community, is that in a very small radius, your cash is safe because they know each other. They know what's happening. But the moment you go a little bit wider, then it's unsafe. And how do you break that? I think you know if I look at South Africa, it's interesting if you look at the title deeds in these townships. A good 50-60% of the title deeds are not being passed over from the grandfather, et cetera, et cetera. So they're outdated. Now, if you really want to unlock, if you look at the rental market, we need to go and look and say, but how do we get these title deeds registered under the name of the right persons? And you can unlock web value there, because we're going into that particular market. And it's all about understanding this market. You think, yes, a house or yes, a place. Those title deeds it's not valid because it's been the grandparents' title deeds. And now to support those people to get that across and get it over is a job on its own. But it just shows you the complications. So I don't think the texting is a problem. I think it's more all of us understanding the market and then to say, what can we do? And I'm using the title deeds as an example. What can we do to make title deeds, for example, legally, very quickly, that it's now in the right people, right name, and we can actually start providing credit on those title deeds. And that's just one small example. But I can give you many of these things that we can do in that particular economy.
So, Gigi, you've got a friend here in Mr. Ree. What happens when he retires? Are the rest of the guys at Capitec just as supportive, Gigi?
If I just add to the taxing, I think there's often a perception that people want to stay out of the radar, and that's why they operate in cash. Up till now, they've really operated in cash because they have no alternatives. And once you can provide alternatives of card acceptance and other financial things, PayShop, because I was involved in the launch of PayShop, which is a phone-to-phone instant payments product. Once you can provide those, people move very quickly to digital, because the cost of doing business and the benefits of being on the system and digital and stuff is far higher than the cost of any form of taxation. And then, to add to that, I think there was a report done by the IFC, International Finance Corporation, in 2020 called MSME Voice. And they asked businesses why they operated in cash. 3% of those businesses said they operated in cash because they didn't want to pay tax. 97% had other reasons for operating in cash and were actually wanting to get out of cash, and they had no concern in paying tax, as long as there were benefits of growth, turnover, profitability, and so on.
Well, thank you for dispelling a number of myths today, Gigi Alcock and Gerry Faree. Gerry, I'm so pleased that you've come to support Gigi, who's been fighting a long battle on this front. But as he explained to us, he's been going into these areas for a long, 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 long time. And he's seen the growth and the development of it. And my goodness, if you guys are right, and if you just get a little bit of maybe not negative or destructive energy, just a little bit of positive energy behind it, who knows, that unleashing of the Casinomics, and I hope your book does do well, Gigi, could actually be a reality. Gigi Alcock is the author of the Casinomics series of books, a new one coming out, as he told us. Gerry Faree is the CEO of Capitec, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.